Speaking of liberty, in the public interest, the National Broadcasting Company has made its facilities available for another program in this second series under the auspices of the Council for Democracy. Once again, there is a period of free talk on the air, and once again, our host is Rex Stout, whom most of you already know as the author of Baffling Mystery Stories and as grandparent of the distinguished criminologist Nero Wolfe. On these programs, you'll get to know Rex Stout even better as an outspoken champion of our American democracy. Mr. Stout.
Thank you, Arnold Wilkes. Good evening, friends of liberty. Our guest today, Dorothy Canfield Fisher, is not only a mother of books, but also a godmother. She has written Hillsborough People, The Bent Twig, The Brimming Cup, Fables for Parents, and many others, and is a member of the Board of Judges of the Book of the Month Club. In case that sounds to you like a lazy sort of life, she is also a recognized authority on education and is exceedingly active in welfare and war relief groups. She's come down from Vermont today to answer some questions about women, their place in modern democracy, what the present national emergency means to them, its opportunities, its dangers. You do think it presents dangers, Mrs. Fisher?
It certainly does, Mr. Stout.
And that confronted with danger, women do not merely scream and faint?
I don't think they ever did, except for an audience. I'm reminded of a letter I found once in my Vermont attic, written by my grandmother to her brother in the year 1832, 109 years ago. She had been doing something spectacular and wanted to reassure him. I quote from it. "Quite an unusual thing for a young lady to do, I know, but I assure you that no one can see, even from a distance."
What has she been doing, smuggling?
When people finally found out, Mr. Stout, what she was doing, they were shocked. Doctors said it went counter to certain physiological peculiarities. They said that women who engaged in it would render themselves unfit for the sacred duties of maternity. They said it would ruin their health and actually imperil the future of the race.
What is she doing, quarrying granite?
Swimming, Mr. Stout, just swimming.
Now?
Oh, yes. Of course, it was absurd. But listen. No more absurd than lots of ideas people still have about what women can or can't do. I'm not talking about Europe or China, but the United States of America.
The only thing I think a woman can't... You go on, Mrs. Fisher.
Well, we all know what the Nazi ideal woman is. A human being, non-existent except to bear boy babies to grow up to be soldiers. That's poisonous. But how about the ideal woman of the clever Americans who write our advertisements? She is non-existent, except as a spender of money. The woman held up to praise in those persuasive advertisements is the one who buys the most furniture, household gadgets, cosmetics, hats, shoes, automobiles. She is constantly told that only by many purchases of this or that can she achieve social success. That's not only absurd, it's sort of poisonous, too.
But I don't call that a complete picture of the modern American woman, do you?
Good gracious, no. It's not a picture of what she is, but of what people with gadgets to sell would like to have her be. I call that idea just as ridiculous as our great-grandfather's notions about women not swimming. It's preposterous to steer women away from productive work and useful service.
Especially now when Uncle Sam needs his nieces as much as his nephews.
I'll say he does. Our democracy sees hard times ahead. It's going to take everybody's shoulder to the wheel to get us through what's before us. It's not safe to keep anybody from developing the muscles in those needed shoulders, for it's going to take all of us to hold the fort. For instance, if, as the Nazis do, you shut Jews out from education and economic life, from hope, from the freedom to develop the best and most useful of their traits, you soon create a ghetto that's a plague spot. Not just for them, for the whole nation. In the same way, if women are shut out by meaningless prejudice from full development of their powers, the whole nation will be that much the weaker. Then there's just plain self-preservation. Not enough of us have really taken in what the totalitarian system means for women, would mean for us here if we don't make a success of defending Americanism.
A choice between soldier breeding?
Not even a choice. The totalitarian state makes up everybody's mind for him. I've just been reading a startling book by an American teacher, Gregor Zimmer, called Education for Death. It describes the way German children are trained by the Nazis. Really, Mr. Stout, you'd get the shock of your life if you read that book. German women must raise at least 4 boy soldiers or face the disapproval of the party. And what that means is that you may be forcibly sent away from your home and made to work wherever the government decrees. Women's places in the home is Nazi doctrine? Yes, again. It's in Nazi Germany that women are forced at the point of the bayonet to leave their homes in order to work in factories.
Not neglecting, meanwhile, their quota of 4 boy soldiers, they certainly want it both ways. You remember their ferocious demands for Lebensraum, room to live in.
Is there anybody who doesn't remember that slogan about their country being overpopulated?
Yeah, so what do? Conquer other people's farms and cities for their surplus population and give bonuses for German babies and jump the national birth rate by 30% in 7 years. At that rate, their Lebensraum will reach Indianapolis by, 1950, 60.
And their sons and daughters from early childhood belong absolutely to the state. The Nazi teachers and youth leaders demand practically all the time of the children and young people to make them fanatically fascist-minded and to make sure they will grow up to be hardened servants and soldiers of the Nazi ideas. This means so much organized group life for youngsters that they're seldom at home with their mothers, as our American children are. And when they are at home, they are trained by the state to act as spies on their parents and report to the police anything not wholly Hitler doctrine which may be said in the family.
What you said a minute ago, yesterday Great Britain passed a law conscripting a lot of women.
Yes, by a democratic process. Unmarried women, strictly as a war measure. They're fighting for their lives.
But what about American women, Mrs. Fisher? Free women. Specifically, what can they do to stay free or to help other women to get free?
Probably do just as they have always done. Try to find in new conditions how to carry on their old work.
I don't get it.
Well, take almost any so-called modern occupation for women. If you look at it, you'll see that it's only a transposition of what women have always done. For example, school teaching. What is that but doing in classrooms the same thing which in pre-industrial days mothers, grandmothers, aunts, older sisters were always doing for the children around them? And the girls in canning factories, the armies of women who fetch and carry and give personal services in shops and offices, who run looms in woolen and cotton mills, who use sewing machines in garment-making centers, who are nurses in hospitals, aren't they all doing, in the only way the modern world permits, just what women have always done? Producing food, manufacturing clothing, taking care of the young and sick and old, serving those around them.
Well, that's an ingenious idea.
Oh, don't be so cautious, Mr. Stout. You certainly wouldn't say that a farmer was no longer a producer of food because he reaps his wheat with a machine instead of a sickle, would you?
No.
Well, why is a woman doing new and modern work because she nurses the sick in a white uniform instead of being dressed in hooped skirts? And here's another idea. Did you ever think that women in the modern world, doing in the modern world only the work they have always done, also are as unanimously not doing work they never did in the home? That is, basing their lives on the profit motive. Yes, I know that a very few women have owned businesses and directed factories, but so few you can hardly find examples of it. Yet it takes no physical strength to be the president of a bank or a steamship line. It does take capital, and women have often inherited capital. But when they go to work outside the home, it's mostly in their old role of doing service, not in making a profit on commercial transactions.
Well, then it isn't womanly to buy and sell at a profit?
Now, Mr. South, that's just what I don't mean. There's not a bit of evidence either way on that point. It's just that the profit motive is wholly outside their old experience of work for their families. They're not at home in that element. In professions like nursing or teaching, they get to the top and become leaders, the smartest of them. But you don't often hear of a woman owning and running a steam laundry.
It seems likely that before this war has ended, we'll hear of them doing a lot of things, though not for financial profit. In England, women have volunteered by thousands for all kinds of work. War and the threat of invasion have given British women a new freedom and a sense of sharing in their country's defense equally with the men.
Yes, and the neurologists say that all English people, men too, have a new sense of sharing and being useful, which gives them new courage and strength. Everybody needs that feeling. Modern women especially, constantly looking for new ways to carry on the age-old usefulness which in pre-industrial days made them indispensable to their husbands and families. If the modern woman is to find the eternally lasting satisfactions of life, she must learn how to transpose her old responsibilities into modern terms. For instance, modern women are still responsible for the sound education of their children as much as ever, although their children are taught in classrooms. The mothers are responsible, as citizens, for the quality of education given in the classroom.
Which, in one way, makes their job harder instead of easier.
Indeed it does. It's hard to step out from the family circle, so familiar to untold generations of our ancestresses, and find our way through the maze of modern life to those same old duties. Those modern institutions, schools, hospitals, libraries, and all the rest, they won't function by themselves if citizens, women too, don't work as hard to keep them efficient as we used to work individually to give our children what they need. A little boy breaks his leg. He's taken to a finely equipped modern hospital where he is given much better medical care than great-grandmother could have given her little boy. But the mother is still responsible for the right care of that broken leg, only in a new way.
You mean it's the mother's responsibility to work with others to keep that hospital well-equipped and staffed?
That's the idea. She has to do her share in seeing that all little boys get care to make sure that her little boy does.
But Mrs. Fisher, what specific extra jobs for women do you suggest now?
Well, there's the big job of finding decent living conditions for people working in defense areas. It's hard to believe some of the stories we hear about overcrowding. They say there are actually places where people are sleeping in shifts, three people using the same bed in eight-hour periods.
And in boom towns, housing is only one problem.
Of course. When you jam human beings together in such crowds, you get problems everywhere. Where can the children of the defense workers go to school? And their getting a decent schooling is of vital importance for our nation. Where can the young folks get decent fun during their leisure hours? The government agencies are doing a good deal. But it takes real neighborliness to rise to such an emergency. Americans have always been fine at rising to meet emergencies like earthquakes or floods. Why do some women seem to resent those new workers who, to aid in our defense program, have been obliged to go into their placid little towns? Here is a big job for women in town after town all over the country. To make people feel at home, that's peculiarly something women are always trained to do.
More power to you. Thank you very much, Mrs. Fisher. Time's up. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today has been Dorothy Canfield Fisher. This is Rex Stout saying goodbye until next week.
You have just heard the ninth of another series of programs entitled Speaking of Liberty, brought to you each week in the public interest by the National Broadcasting Company under the auspices of the Council for Democracy, a national organization dedicated to the propagation of an American faith in democracy. Next week, Rex Stout will bring Erskine Caldwell to the microphone. A copy of the script of this broadcast will be mailed free to anyone requesting it. Please address your letter or card to the Council for Democracy, 285 Madison Avenue, New York City. The Council invites you to listen in on a special program, Democracy at Work, on Saturday afternoon from 2 to 2:30 Eastern Standard Time over this network. Speaking of Liberty has been presented as a public service by NBC and the independent radio stations associated with the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.